have received apologies from members Christians, from members Christians, and I did not receive from members Brothers. Just from Christians, I have received apologies. Before we go into the book, I'm going to have an opportunity to
I think a reality of if you like, political nightmare, I think. And so it's very difficult to decide on that, because they have to be business school. But at the same time, they haven't got the money. So we've taken a little bit off that to signal the importance of the fact that we can't do everything. We've also reduced the funding for teacher training. We've developed funding for teacher training over the last number of years. We still have teacher training, but we've taken away the district focus so that the district can focus on supporting teachers in the classroom, which we believe is actually the place where it should be. Also, there are a number of other things that we've had to do. I mean, the inclusive education basket, we've taken away a little bit there. It ought not to be. We all do that. The issues such as the youth purchase project, jobs fund, comes to an end. It's a little bit the same as we've done. Now, the key issue is, let's put it a thumb and egg, is for example, the demand that sometimes comes at us from the national body. For example, the issue of enhancing the second chance matric support. Now, initially, that was intended simply to be for our budget. And we have a big dilemma because we haven't got enough money for R12 to take away the youth that support second chance that have had a first bite of the cherry already. We think is a difficult moral question. We believe, in fact, those learners need support, but we don't think it should come from basic education budget. We believe that should be high education. They are all learners who've gone through the schooling system. They are at least two or more years, in fact, in many cases, more than the compulsory school age. And we believe higher education through adult centers ought to be bringing opportunities closer to those learners. Again, there are a number of those issues. And so our balancing act in trying to get the budget so that we do not cut teachers first, for example. You will no doubt ask, as you go along, about the reality of large classes. Now, we know, and you know, I said before, we now have a large student teacher ratio in the country. And the reason is simply that there's not been enough money for the growth. You will see the growth figures in the detail of the last number of years, at times 150,000, 99,000, etc. And the money for growth, which has on occasion been little pockets of growth, has not been eradicated at the back of, let alone growth. We need money for schools, we need money for teachers, we need money for resources. And so with economic climate and the challenges of funding education, in my view from the educational perspective, that the rest of it needs to be funded for quality education, that is being eroded. And so we've had a really tough time trying to mess with it. I'm going to leave it to the chair at that at the moment. I think that it frames, however, the conversation that we believe ought to be considered.
Mr. Ashley, thank you very much. I'll give it over to you if you want to pose questions on the closed module as just indicated by Mr. Ashley. No? Okay,
thank you very much. Thank you very much to the provincial minister and Ashley. It's our prayer over you. And I think also just also want to thank the HOD as well for the cooperation. So they raise issues even offline, and there are problems with regards to learner placements in particular, and inconsistencies that we pick up. The HOD does respond and sees to those matters. So while we are critical, we also want to commend the HOD and the minister for that. Thank you very much. I think within that context, I just wanted to get a sense. When the minister and the team sat in this committee, I think it was in February, we were given an update as to the amount of learners that are in place. I know it comes later, but I said, let's handle it now and we don't have to get to play from. Just wanted the latest statistics of the unplaced learners. What has been the challenges in ensuring that they're in place, because we were told that at the end of February, we won't be sitting with this problem. So I just wanted to get an indication as to what is the current challenge in that regard. Thank you.
I'm
going to finish the comment and then my colleague will answer it, but that commitment was made by Mr. Adamay at a convening even yesterday, but unfortunately he had to go to a urgent COVID meeting. But I'm going to ask my
section would try the best investments by the territory. It's not an easy task to do. The current figure is 1,265. That's broken down to Great Arms, I think in the region of 290 odd in Great Arms. The others are interspersed. Now, my colleagues have thought that they, by this time, have been able to get the cooperation of schools to be able to face all of these lanes. A number of these will be resolved and is being resolved with the additional posts that we gave after the fifth school day. There's another submission on the way to take a look at which is the schools with the toughest duplication, so that we can give a degree of support there. My concern is that giving support there doesn't mean that we have less learners necessarily. It's just helping the tough conditions. But nonetheless, we do believe that there is some of that. The second thing that we're doing, two more things. The second thing that we're doing is we are looking at where there are schools that are in the vicinity of the learners that can still take learners. And we're engaging with those schools in the sense sometimes also I was going to say forcing schools to take those learners, simply because of the constitutional mandate we have to place those learners. And the third thing that we are doing is checking every day whether these learners are still contactable. And in fact, we finally just need to find them not contactable. You phone both numbers that they have given originally and email them in response. Now that's also a challenge. Possibly means that those learners are either found patients in the school or hospital that we don't know, or that those learners have maybe returned to their wherever they come from. And I say that because if you take a look at the data further on, you will see that we will come to that. For example, 19,623 new entrants are from the Eastern Cape, only 1,000 from Gauteng as the second highest. For the rest, all provinces there are learners in the region of about 200 to 400 and more than 800. So it's quite possible that with the challenges that we face, parents are maybe either sending their kids back or taking them back. It's not the position that we want to be in, but it is a position. So the challenge also that we have is with the figures that we put, the figures from books, it's not necessarily the real life individual. It's quite a difficult issue, but we're not satisfied with it. I mean, it's been this first term. We understand the position of those kids and learners, and we're doing everything possible to clear as much space as we can.
Thank you very much for the response, SG. That takes me then to the issue of the online application. Because we've spoken about the backlog of unplaced learners, which is way out of control, but I understand that something being done. But there's also the online applications for next year. Just wanted to get a sense from the department, maybe from the NGS, to what have been the challenges experienced so far with the prospect. We've noticed that many parents are experiencing challenges, particularly those in the rural communities. So we just wanted to get a sense of that as to, because I believe that closing date is soon. Is there any intention to extend the date, the cut-off date, perhaps after reflecting maybe getting the application and then having another round? Just wanted to get a sense of that. And is there a provision, and I know we'll get into the budget in more detail, but just in terms of a hybrid approach, to say that look, we've got the online applications, people know what they must do, but to maybe have a human resource deployment or human resource rollout in those communities and those areas where people are not able to physically do it correctly, and there are shopping malls, the shopping centers, taxi rank, various space, so that you get a sense of that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would latch on to the opening remarks of Mr. Ayers, and also the Minister. Person also has this in that regard. But on that particular same point, would we have a breakdown of actually when a learner attempted to get into the school year or something, to say that between November last year and January, X amount, but then if someone actually came last week, how do we actually track it? Well, obviously, we would understand there would be certain constraints, the department would be aware that you don't need to deteriorate, for example, to be part of different strategies. But what is the strategy in terms of getting buy-in from parents to play more of an active role? What type of communication and strategies we were in? We were at the oversight, and at one particular school, it was a high percentage between parents to actually apply, but the school was also very proactive in engaging the community to make sure that they get the one day, they get more parents in order to get all the tax in the help. So from the department side, probably in the absence of this lack of leadership, for example, in a certain school, it could be lacking. I'm not sure if that question is clear enough. Thank you.
Thank you. With depending on the challenges on the online applications as well as the late comers, going forward and looking at next year, what is it in the challenges that you see that you are going to do differently if you are going to do anything differently?
I'm
going to
try
to
answer, then I'll add
a few minutes
of anything else.
An extensive answer. thank you for that. Firstly, we started the online application in 2018 or 2019, and we did that as a pilot in a small number of schools. It was, I think, about 300 schools. We extended the pilot initially to 750 schools only. That's about half of our schools, as a pilot. We indicated that any parent can do an online or a paper-based application. Both of those are possible. We've been blown away by the need and the demand of parents actually wanting to do the online, even when the pilot wasn't. It's 4.12.5. And part of that has been that we also ask schools to support parents where they don't have the online system, but also to tell them that they can still do paper-based. If they come with a paper-based, the school captures the application of the parent on the database. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we were overwhelmed by the numbers of parents that came in. We expected a surge. We prepared for the surge. The Center for E-Innovation, which is the owner of platform that is used, I think we're also caught a bit unawares by the numbers that happened. And I don't want to give false information, but I also think that load shedding is playing a bit of a role, because there are parents that say we can't, we get kicked off, you know, we're not on, maybe the Wi-Fi isn't working, or the Wi-Fi cuts out, or the Wi-Fi signal isn't strong, where they are. Because when the official goes in with that parent's information and password, they get one. So I think it's a process. We have to understand that whenever we tackle something new, and we said this to the system in the Western Cape, we do it in a phased and a stepped way, so that we don't just dump everything and there's no recourse for parents that struggle. However, I also know that that information doesn't get everywhere. And so we have asked our schools on a number of occasions to make sure that that information is there. If I tell you that the online administration up to this point has had 291,311 applications submitted. That includes, of course, 2, 3, or 4 applications per parent. That's a huge amount of applications. Of those, 7,812 user sessions as of the is the need and reality, but like everything else we do, we're not what's the right word, we understand the challenges of parents, so if there's a need, we will. However, the moment we do that, we're putting pressure on our very same system downstream, because there's a timeline after this for school, and it's intended that they can do certain holiday. You start shifting the applications and you start placing learners in their schools. Now, if we delay it, say till the end of March, it means till the end of the holiday, say the school holiday, we're also aware that the school holiday starts on the 20th, and that means schools aren't available to assist parents in that time. So there are all kinds of challenges, but we're open to the possibilities and the need for that. Maybe 5,209 parents have captured the application. That's where parents have done so by their own volition, and schools have captured 14,720. That means where the school has captured on behalf of parents. I'm just giving that to you on the big figures. Take a look at the numbers. South, 62,000, East, 59, Eastern North, 55, etc. Central, 52,000, the rural areas lesser. The schools that have large numbers of applications, and I know we're an open audience and I don't want to put pressure on schools or anything of that nature, but you'll be surprised at the schools that are in high demand. They are good schools in all communities, and not just particular senior schools. If I look here, seven suburbs, two in Mitchell's Plain in the first three, four in the first five schools with high demand, high need. So those issues I think are important. Now the process, you also asked two things. One, you asked them about when did they come in, or do we know when they're coming in? And the answer is yes and no. Yes, we know if they enter in the appropriate way, but we're also aware that in some communities, parents or communities demand that principals take learners at a time later than the application at first, and up to 100 or more learners are forced on the school. And the school, because we live in South Africa, we fully understand the educational needs are either accepted or are in this sense forced to accept to avoid unrest or whatever other educational costs. That's very problematic for us for an organized system, trying to get decent planning in place. And then when that happens, the demand is there for extra classes, which is not in the plan of the space. That is not significant, it's in a few such cases. Now, I say again that our system is not fully online. When we have a full online system, probably in next year or the 30th year after that, and even then, we will still indicate to parents that they don't have access, that they can go to schools for assistance, for libraries or other places, to get online or still have a paper-based system. We believe that the paper-based, as we see at the moment, is just going to go exponentially down in the market. The aspects about when they come, by far the majority actually applied, and maybe not by the end of March, by the date they were supposed to be last year, because in climate thing, we were a little lenient. And we also gave parents, remember the system is such that there's an application process, then it closes, then schools place. Where schools placing, there are a number of places where learners, they are not placed, or because they've applied for five schools, they've gotten one, four places to open somewhere else. So we give a second round of opportunity then for placing, not for applications, for places which have already applied by the 17th of March. That second round of placing then happens. Parents have at a certain date to accept the placing, and their parents are also in a tough position. They don't know who to accept what is available or where they're placed. But where the Minister of Department must change next year is my official being good education is also gone. And instead of saying there's this closing date and after this date we place you, because that's what we said we would do. But they dragged that on for another 2 months or so trying to get a consensus placed. Now that's cool, but that means people will expect that to happen all the time in climate. So in the way forward, we've got to stick to the data a little more. So part of the challenge, let me say, is we already start in the very first part of the present by giving extension, then we put pressure on the taxes. As I indicated, that doesn't mean that we very hard and defer the cost of that space.
Just one thing. Yes, the last point is we just say that we were given that we are going to do that this year. Because it's put us in a difficult position that now, I mean, we can't say we're going to do something and not do it. Right? So, other thing is, we've also found problems with schools giving wrong messages. We've told schools unequivocally that people may have an online application or they may do a paid application. And some schools have still refused to take a paid application, which is wrong. So that's another problem we've had, and if you can spread the message out there to anyone who doesn't know. So that is one of the problems we've had a lot of. And the other thing that was very helpful and useful for us is quite a few people in different communities have actually started whatever grouping they belong to, they've actually made themselves available over weekends, for example, to help people register online, which has also been very useful. They've, I know it's also one community had a sort of a Saturday morning where they got offered that they were helped. Who weren't able to get online to do that. So I think that's also quite nice if more organizations will can do that in communities, that's also very helpful. Because it does seem to make our job easier if we can see it online, because it's much easier to extract the relevant information from it. Thanks.
Ishi, I just want to take you back to the 1255 that's not there. So the still has to end by next week. So the catch up. And do you sort of know this trick? And then also, are there in classrooms as we are speaking that are above the norm, your mean, your ratio? And how do you then, in terms of those educators, teachers, how are they kept? And I don't want to use the word saying, maybe I should say, how are they kept? Happy in the classroom because the numbers are now so great that they have to teach.
Thank you, Chair. I had
some
difficult questions right up front, but they were curious. First of all, we started with something like 24,000 third of the year ambassadors. We worked them down at 1,200. It's an amazing achievement, quite honestly. Started with the 11 in January, etc. So the last bit on our point. And as I've indicated, I've got a good feeling that not all of those 1.5 are around to be. So we're still continuing. We wanted to try to do that before the end of next week, but I'm not like my colleague going to promise us we'll be back before the end of the month. But we will continue also in part of that in trying to be pleasure and the beginning of next year. We'll see in the beginning of next term. What is still on the ground, if any. That's the first thing. The question about what we do with teachers at Ambia, I'm not sure what you reckon the norm is, Chair. Our pupil teacher ratio, norm seems to be 1:38. As I've indicated on a previous occasion, where principals don't teach full time, it's actually 1:40. And we have classes in excess of that, given the different numbers of learners who pass or fail or repeat or so forth in the class. We've explained to our teachers, I've written to our schools to explain the reality of, it's not a question of trying to nail our teachers, we simply don't have enough money to keep up with the pace of demand. And so I'm really grateful and quite humbled by the fact that teachers aren't rebelling because they understand the reality. Our support has to be through those teachers in the classroom. I've asked wherever I've gone in districts, and I want to make an appeal here today too because of the voice that you have, is that we have to appeal to more and more people to volunteer to assist those teachers in the classroom as volunteer assistants. I've been in schools in various countries overseas where it's worked brilliantly, where it's actually an office for people registered, and if you haven't heard of that kind, there are so many people that are not employed that can give a couple of hours or one day a week or something like that. So we've got to ask society and community also help us a little bit, knowing our customers for our teachers. At the same time, we're investing in our teachers. You're aware of the transform reform strategy, where we're helping our teachers to get to grips with the understanding of the reality. We want to get, I mean, it's exacerbated when kids' behavior is lousy, or where the societal issues spill into the school. We want to get our kids' mindsets right. We want to get them to understand that they go to school to learn, not to mess around with it and so forth. That will help a lot if the order and discipline of the classroom is right. We also suggested to teachers things such as being well prepared helps, teaching from the minute to the lesson goes. It's tough. And I mean, I've got huge sympathy with our teachers, and I've got tremendous respect for the way in which they come to grips with it. In this report, you were much other see, I'm not sure if it's an agency, or in the five-year step plan, you'll see, for example, the increase in teachers' well-being challenges. I mean, this is the reality of the pressures that we contribute to put them on. We simply got as a society.
Maybe my question should have been support for the teachers. Maybe that should have been my question. Support to the teachers in my education.
that, so just to get clarity.
You're saying, Jane, this is my page, and this is the question that I'm asking, and you ask for your whole range.
Yes, right, I'm told, because I'm told the annex shifts, huh?
Yes.
So I'm told the receipts and finances. Mm.
Yeah, so the annex shifts are to, what is it, to 192, yeah? Then, 18, Minister, Department, you are going to follow with where the pages are and what the questions on those pages are. Okay. Well, we'd like to get started. End of it. Okay, maybe I should do it this way. Member, Rank A, any questions? No. Member Say, come back with you.
Thank you. I hope we'll be allowed follow-up this round.
No.
Thank you. Thank you. Much of what I wanted to ask in terms of at least the draining issues, immediate draining issues were responded to, but I just wanted to, so with regards to on page, page 159, let's get the next of any issue on the issue of main services and core functions. Overall planning for management of the education system, obviously the main service and core functions department. I wanted to get a sense with regards to its planning and management functions. Can the department perhaps indicate what are the plans to curb the spread of the coronavirus at the schools? And also just an indication, because there have been, there's been news flying around that 8 schools closed. I think that was yesterday we received that report. So we get a sense as to the profile of those schools, what are the reasons as to why the schools closed, and what measures are being taken to reduce the spread at the schools. That's the one. Then, on page 160, there's a section there, which is page 160, so six lines above where it says values, the six sentences above that, speaks about improving safety at schools, that more schools have high security perimeter fencing. Now, the Premier also made an announcement around the fencing. I just wanted to get a sense as to how many schools have been identified for this particular financial year for fencing, for security fencing. Because there have been schools that recently have raised issues with ourselves, for example, Bulleri Primary is one of them. They've raised issues, Mannenberg High School, the Hague Primary School. I just wanted to get a sense as to, and then there's another case in Worcester where there were protests as well that just took place around the week. Then, on page 161, with regards to demand and changes in services, speak about shrinking budgets, making it increasingly difficult to provide adequate supply of classrooms and support material. On the issue of the shrinking budgets and the increasing sizes of learners, we made proposals in the last committee meeting. Just wanted to get a sense, I'm not saying that we should implement it, but just if there's been a look at those proposals. The one is the utilization of the provincial reserves. The department looked at engaging with Treasury for the utilization of the provincial reserves to build new schools and to employ more teachers. Also the engagement with the Model C schools around the placement of learners that are going to be creating, for example, overcrowding in the other
applying the criteria of admissions once mechanism is in place for that, because sometimes you'll find certain schools say, no, we only can have these amount of learners in a class 4, well, there will be a random in terms of, so I just wanted to get a sense of that. And on that note, and I'm going to ask you, can we take resolutions, if we could get a breakdown, maybe not now, I'm not expecting it now, that we can be submitted to the committee, a breakdown of the manual as well as the online applications to schools, and the successes and also those that have been rejected and reasons for rejection. I don't know how realistic it is, but if we could get some type of record sent to the committee for it, because it's part of our oversight to have a look at that. Then paragraph 3 on page 162, the provincial program on school safety. There, I just wanted to get a sense as to when we visited Pieter Municipality as a committee. What we noticed, and I think that was this year, that the municipality assigned law enforcement officers. In fact, there was quite an assignment. In fact, at one school there were 10, it was a vulnerable school. And I know in the city of Cape Town it has started to happen, and we've been raising that issue, but in other rural communities, what is the level of engagement and commitment from municipalities to do that, to do what we're speaking about, for example? Also with regards to the school safety, if I can just get a sense as to the latest developments with regards to the impasse between the Khayelitsha Education Forum and the department. Just there, because there was talk about that we found that it would already be made available, but the project not yet being implemented. We hear various stories. I just want to get a sense of the department in that regard. Then, on page 163, the last paragraph, the capital expenditure decrease. I just wanted to get a sense as to whether the department has engaged with Treasury about infrastructure needs and asked for an increment. And then secondly, what progress has been made with regards to the building of the Rural School in Kales River, which according to that school was a commitment in 2009 for the building of the Rural. I just wanted to know, because I looked at page 123 to 157 in the APP, the school is not there. I wanted to see as to why it's not there. Then, also on page 163, the with regards to the decreased capital expenditure, I wanted to know, there were calls in Bloemfontein in particular, classes in the Bloemfontein area, for another secondary school. Now I understand, even the cost that is not going to be easy, but there were proposals that were made by the community, including by stakeholders involved at the Masibambane High School, around vacant land on that particular high school, and the unutilized mobile classes. Just wanted to get a sense as to whether that proposal was communicated to the department as the public engaged with that particular proposal as a means of having maybe a temporary high school, as we saw the department did in Mutual Splane at some stage. Then, with regards to the building of the refurbishment, should I say, the building of the new Mannenberg Primary School, as reflected on page 144 of the ATP, but it's also tied to what I'm speaking about on page 163. Can we get an update as to the stakeholder engagement that has taken place in that regard? Who has the department engaged with? and particularly with regards to the ongoing gang violence in the area, what measures have been taken to ensure the safety of the workers, the safety of the infrastructure, and the safety of our departmental officials that are visiting that particular area? Then on page 165, the second paragraph speaks about the improvement of the quality of teaching through e-learning, collaboration schools and school evaluation authority. I wanted to get a sense as to what has been the impact of collaboration schools in selected schools. Perhaps we could possibly, as a resolution chair, you can ask for a detailed report on the performance of collaboration schools, or even a separate meeting with the department can present on that. But also, what is the total budget for the school evaluation authority for the year, for the financial year? I'm not sure whether I'm missing it, but I couldn't get a sense of that. And if you could just explain that in that context, what is the difference between the role of the school evaluation authority and the circuit managers and the district office? I just wanted to get a sense of that. Then, okay, that's covered there, you covered. Then the page 167, the final paragraph on member transport. So we've seen now we welcome the decision taken by the department to reinstate the government with member transport. But could we maybe just get more details as to why because the media spoke about a statement, but I've not seen the statement. We just get a sense as to why the learning transport was reinstated in Belfort, which what were the reasons for that? And do we find the same reasons for learning transport to probably be reinstated in, for example, Worcester, for example, which was an FCF Premier, it's another example. I just wanted to get a sense as to what the decision to reopen that transport and where we had there. Then, Chair, am I allowed to go from 170 onwards as well? The receipts and financing?
No,
tangible, but also specifically to the safe schools
programs. Is that being kicked up a notch? What are we doing in that regard? And it would be interesting to hear regarding the call center. In the same school call center, if offhand, if you have the information on the amount of calls that potentially that we see in terms of safety concerns that were addressed by the same school call center. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good things to everyone here. Chair, from your report, I want to ask the first question from the application process. I want to check if we, yesterday, the closing day 12, if I missed that information, apologies, Chair. Do we have timelines in terms of when schools are supposed to accept or make a decision in terms of the application and all that process? I'm asking this question, Chair, because we don't want a situation where by next year you get schools saying we're still waiting to see if parents again will take this opportunity or is going to another school that is there. Now, I want to check that the system gives us an indication if a person has been accepted so that we know that if the person has applied for 3, now that application is no longer there. That's one question I wanted to get. On the safety in relation to school, if you remember yesterday, Chair, and I think you asked me in this one, when we asked a question around the school resource officer to the Department of Community Safety, and that why only are they working with the city of Cape Town deploying in Metro, what about other areas? There was a remark that was made to say that the money, or I don't know what figure was mentioned, but the money for 50 million is not with them, but the Department of Education for programs around safety in schools. So I want to get an indication, because in many engagements that we continuously have with the department, we get an indication that safety is not our money. Schools exist in communities that community safety must take that responsibility. But yesterday there was an indication that an amount of 50 million was given to the department for that program. The other question I have, Chair, on page 161, I think page 161 is trying to, on the demand and changes in the page, is trying to take a picture of the pressure that are in our system. And also with the immigration of learners, especially from the Eastern Cape. And this is one question that always, one subject that always tries to better my understanding on as to how it affects our system. Now I want to check because immigration from the Eastern Cape is going to happen, I don't know until when. And it did not start in the last 15 years, for example. And others will move to the Western Cape where they want to be learners in the Western Cape, but move to the Western Cape because their parents are looking for a better economic opportunities. Now, what I want to ask the government is there active involvement in the cabinet space with other departments. Like if we're planning, like in Colorado, you are planning a housing development. If you are planning an economic whatever, whether it's an SEZ or IDZ, whatever you are planning, an economic project, what is the department's role in the planning process to ensure if there is a possibility of people will be moving into that area, there will be demand of education opportunities. Now in that planning process, where are we involved as a department? Because I see now in Conrad, I think there were talks of a private school they are living in mixed social housing development. Now it means that when all those people are there going to go from the school, there will be a demand for a public ordinary school schooling opportunity. Now I want to check that. I hope the question has been able to be captured in that regard. The last question, Chair, I have is on page 174. I see in the table 8.1 an increase of about 163% in the office of the MEC. Is that I assumed that it might be the one with not the MEC as president of the office. I assume that it might be the evaluator, but I do not want to make that assumption. Now, I want to check what gives credence to that increase, because the other year it was 6, 8, and now 21, and 10.
Thank you,
Chairperson. I just want to find out, I can only see it under the section of the legislation, the impact of the Commission for Children Act. Increase in the National School Nutrition Program as well as an increase in the funding available for the wide feeding school program. I want to ask whether there's going to be a relook at the policies that sort of guide how food is distributed, because we recently came from the West Coast, and we're at the airport primary, they said that there are 1,200 learners, but only enough money to feed half of those kids. So the teacher then decides which kid eats on which day. And that is also linked to how the school categorizes the quintile, so that the quintile determines how much money they get. So I just wanted to know that increase I think it's over 7% increase in the innocent feed gene grant, as well as the market feed, whether that's been facilitated in your policy. And then I want to find out I can't see it, but I want to put it in the department of the budget for legal fees in defending court cases, and perhaps if an update can be given on the court case around the collaboration schools, and perhaps if the MEC or the MEC can give us an update on how things are going with the school evaluation authority, the setup of that, and where we are with the school evaluation authority.
That is a mouthful, yeah. I'm giving you the end
department. Before we start answering the question, Member Martin's first question, what about the Child Commission?
Under the section with the legislation of impact work of the department, that legislation is not in, so I just wanted to find out whether that's impacted in.
The safety shake, and then the other thing is, of course, the was just an ambush and a feeling, so we could do the bare minimum, seed material output. So we could really emphasize on that and the tools on seed, make sure that they implement that. And then we will obviously take whatever measures need to be taken if and when a case arrives that affects the specific. Fencing, we've identified 33 here. That's obviously school drainage issues all the time. Every time school wants something, they protest. If they don't get it right, they then go to the Premier. We cannot do government by protest. We have got a plan of action and we have identified schools and we're going to do it according to that plan of schools. We simply have to have money to be able to fence every single school that needs fencing all in one go, even though we would like to do so. Then, yes, of course, we've engaged with provincial treasury. We engage with them all the time. We engage with national treasury. Honourable Sides will notice that I've called Minister Lemonson Boeing the other day when he came to the budget speech, and I asked him also, I said, we need more money. The reality is, people keep saying there's a lot of money allocated to education in South Africa, as it is, but I don't think it's been distributed properly. And there are cases, some provinces where they have schools that are half empty or completely empty, and they carry on going. As soon as they try and close them down, the union starts moaning, and then stops. But the effect of that is that the money isn't going where children are. And that has got to change. Then we don't have multi schools anymore, so I can't answer about multi school placements, but former multi schools. We've answered this question, I think, on numerous occasions, and we'll do it once again. They have policies. We do force them to take people where possible. HED has written to a number of schools before, but it doesn't always solve the problem because, first of all, if we're going to force more and more people into those schools, parents who are paying a lot of money for those schools will simply take them out of school and put them in private schools. So we will then lose that funding in the public system. So it's a very fine balancing act, but just this week I filed two appeals as well for people in a former multi school, where I believe it was discriminatory or the practice that were being conducted by the school, and that is the mechanism. If people think they are unfairly discriminated against, they have the right to appeal to me, and if we find that unfair discrimination, then we will do so. But even before it gets to that point, we have been engaging with them for a number of years now already. We've been also offering them to expand schools where there are well-functioning schools that add classrooms on. And then, of course, what happens is the budget gets cut and then they need more teachers and they can't provide them, and then they as well. So it's a very difficult balancing act, but we have had ongoing engagements with those schools and continue to do so. There is also the appeal mechanism. The other problem is also that very often the places that are needed are not in the area where those schools are. So it doesn't always help the problem, because then if people can't afford to get to the school and then transport it, doesn't allow the policy to get extra money as well. So it's not always as simple. But we certainly are doing everything we possibly can. Provincial reserves, you need to keep some provincial reserves as well, because of things like coronavirus, for example. So I don't think it would be a responsible government to spend all of our provincial reserves on one department. I don't think that would be right, even though obviously you would like it. Online and manual education schools, in general, I don't think we can say who was not accepted by which schools and for what reasons. You heard there's 200 and something thousand applications. If we did that, I think our staff would be busy drafting that report the entire time. B2, I haven't heard of that before. Pleased to hear that. We do have ongoing discussions with municipalities. And certainly we will ask them that. As you know, the Premier is heading the safety of the province. He's heading that committee, together with community safety. But we do have a representative there and we'll ask them to raise it. But we also have got engagement with municipalities. We have got a PTF meeting where we raise issues with them and they can certainly take that forward, I think, as well. There's no impact between the KDF anymore. We had a really productive meeting about 2 weeks ago with them, myself and Mr. Fritz, and various officials as well as the City of Cape Town and people. And we've come up with a task team who's going to be working together, and I'm actually very encouraged by it because it was a good meeting. They understand that education is not the department that can solve all safety problems. We have to work together, and Metro Police will help, and we also need to get SACs in there because obviously they are a primary role player. They unfortunately weren't there, but they have previously been with us in meetings with the KDF. So we've now got the task team. We're going to work together with the staff as well as neighbourhood watchers to assist the neighbourhood watchers to get accredited and see what we can do there. I would actually like to ask the committee to call the SAT to come sometime to brief you as to what they're doing about that. It is their primary mandate to keep safety and keep us safe and secure in terms of the constitution. They have a huge budget to do so. And I have some concerns. How many of those principals who've been shot have actually been, how many arrests have been made? How many people have actually been charged? How many have been convicted? We've been keeping a bit of a record on school vandalism cases and there hasn't been one. So we can't do everything as education. We can't keep safety and combat vandalism and combat gangsterism on our own. But we certainly are engaging with all of our players whenever we can. Rubel is on the cards at last. We've been battling, and Mr. Abram can give further info, but we've been battling to get land. It is now as well as resolved as the process has been transferred. But until it is transferred, we can't commit planning because obviously given the conflicting demands we have, we can't plan until we know for sure that that is in our possession because we can do other things with that money in the meantime. But Mr. Abram can give more info. Calls on the Kumbos. It's not really, you know, we can't say because people have land available we can just build a school there. We've got a plan of action regarding the entire province and we can't just say because one community now says they want it, and we know they need it, but they're not the only community that needs it. So we have to prioritize and we can't just say put up a gym school, we need teachers for that school. As you've heard, we haven't got money for more teachers. So we can't just put up wherever we feel like it. We have to have a really organized program. Mannenberg, I am not sure about that update, so I'll give that to Mr. Schiller. Collaborating schools, the impact overwhelmingly is positive. There have been one or two issues where they haven't been as good as we were hoping, but overall, they are definitely showing very good promise, and their results are improving above that of the province as a whole. The C budget, my HD will answer. The difference between the role of C and the CM's industry officers is that the C goes and assesses the school. They will go and do an evaluation of the school independently. They will engage with all role players in the school, including parent body, governing body, the teachers, principal, everybody. They will then give feedback to the school and will write a report on the school. Issues that need to be attended to by the school and all the department will be done by the circumstances and the district. So it's a completely separate process. So we can get independent assessment. We don't want someone going in there with bias, for example, or maybe want to hide things, and sometimes officials who work with particular schools may have a tendency to do that because it won't be as transparent and won't show up issues that need to be attended to. So the intention is to show more transparency as to what is actually going on there, that's more independent, and that the result of that must then be dealt with by the school and the department. Then the transport, there was no decision by the department to reinstate it, it was a decision by myself to reinstate it, because it was an appeal to me after the department said no. For good reasons, they said no for very good reasons. There were safety measures that were put in place subsequent to the previous institution of the route. Bridges were built over railway lines, there were pedestrian crossings there in the road on the N1. The reason why I did decide to uphold the appeal were largely, once again, issues that relate to things that should be done by other government departments, but at the moment aren't being done. And because of that, I felt it wasn't safe at this point for the children to cross that road. The reasons in my appeal were that it is a national road, that there is a little hill before as you come into that road, the first pedestrian crossing, there's a hill there that makes it quite difficult for people coming, especially when they're speeding, which they do often, to stop in time. There aren't any traffic lights at any of the pedestrian crossings, and there were not even traffic officers who were supposed to have been there at the site when the children were crossing, until they suddenly heard we were there, and then they So I can see from that that obviously it wasn't being done as it should, and on that basis I thought it wasn't safe for the children, but I would not like that to be seen as a long-term solution. We are engaging with the district mayor. We're having a meeting in the next few weeks with all the mayors of that district municipality to see how how we can work together with other operators to make sure that we put more measures in place in our state. And no, it doesn't mean that any other area will qualify, because these were very specific circumstances. There were also a large number of learners, and it also, we do 700 learners crossing that road are going to pose a danger also to oncoming traffic, as well as to themselves. So until those other issues are dealt with, I felt that at the moment I couldn't. But I don't blame the department for the decision that was taken initially. It was done in good faith, and you know, sometimes we just have to, that's why I have an appeal mechanism. So that's how it is. My HIV is not happy. Then as far as safety and fencing, I've dealt with already. We do discuss with other departments, we do work transparently as much as we possibly can. We've got our VIP tree now, which is empowering people, where we work together a lot with health and DFG, as well as arts and culture, DCAT. Safety presence on these matches and safe schools and online education. We're not given 50 million, and I think that refers to the amount that we allocate from our budget for safety program. That was not supposed to be included in the SOR program, which was being dealt and funded by DART. They are the ones who entered into that program. We've had a bit of a problem with the SOR because of the new LEAP program. A lot of the officers there who were at school have now been absorbed into the LEAP program because it's giving them better opportunities. So we're happy for them in that respect, but it's been unfortunate for us in the school that we are now losing them. The city is trying to make sure that we get more as soon as possible to be able to replace them. And we can't have SROs in other states because others aren't a metro. So they are metro police officers. So obviously if they're not a metro, they can't have metro police. So that's why we don't have them in place. How immigration affects the system? It affects the system because obviously the more people that come in without the main following in place to plot put pressure on the system and create some need for more schools. And it also makes it more difficult for our teachers to teach, obviously, because there are more people in the classroom. Your concern is completely correct, and we do raise it often. How do we keep on providing when more and more citizens are going up? And it's not being provided. The schools are not being provided. And we have engaged with municipalities, but it's a very difficult balance to say, how do we now, do we now ask them to stop approving development? And then what? At the same time, we don't have sufficient allocation to build school in every area where there are citizens. And it's an ongoing tension we have with them, but we certainly do participate in planning, and I think Mr. Abrams can tell you exactly how. But we do have ongoing debt. But I even asked the city a few years ago whether they could rather impose a development contribution on developers so that they can contribute towards schools. Of course, it doesn't help us with teachers either. But it is a very difficult problem. We want the economy to grow, we want it to be able to, you know, get housing at which they need. But of course, the more developments there are, the more school places are needed, and we simply don't get the corresponding budget. And Conradi, you're right. I don't know about now, I'm completely unfascinated, but that's always the dilemma. Children's Commission, I don't know exactly how it's going to affect it, so it's probably why it doesn't be included. NSNP, no, there will not be a review of the policy because there isn't any money to implement a review of the policy. It's a national government grant, and unless they give us more, we can't do more with it. As far as the steel concern is going extremely well, I will expand on it in my budget speech, but it's established because the chief director is appointed, and she's appointed to a team, and they've already started doing school evaluations.
Thank you, Chair and Mr. Chairman. Very well, super. Thank you. I just want to say that the coronavirus is going to add in this comments. There are a number of things that I've met with schools today. One of those things, and of course, we've heard from BBE, who said this day, some of it needs a little bit of mention. But we indicated, for example, that I will not hesitate to close the school if the need is there. But we're not going to close school if the need is there. number of ways we might have to, depending on how the process evolves. I suggest to the teachers that they start thinking a little bit about work they're doing in the next month and then the next month, so that if they share the necessary to close a school or a group of schools, then they are able to give work to the learners to augment through ICT or e-learning. So there's quite a significant comment that I've given. It is the second one. After the first one, I think there was also a good understanding. The comment that we've had on a number of occasions, that the only communication in the country that schools have had, and I think it is important that we keep them abreast. Then, just to add to the safety process going forward, first of all, 150 fences over the next 5 years, 50 per year, budgeted for. The spending on safe schools, there was a task force. Safe schools has 13.6 million, and then with the VIP priority that we've got less funding for, both in the context of fencing and school-based violence prevention programs, 42.7 million in the first year of this coming year. Also to say that if you take a look at page 42 of the strat plan, in that space you'll find the baseline for the calling center number, 660 per annum on school-based violence, 660 calls. The target that we are doing through our violence reduction program is a decrease of 2% per annum. We recognize that's ambitious, because that 2% would be okay to target if the situation remained constant. But if society unravels and the violence in society grows, that 2% will be really tough to achieve, because it will have to be 2% plus reducing the escalation that is happening. It's important that we just understand that. Then, Chair, the admissions monitoring. I just want to say that the question on the reduction, rejections. Of course, at the moment, there are no rejections. And also, the word rejection is a difficult one when you have admissions on an annual basis, because the school gets more applications than they can cope with. So the law gives the government the right to have admissions policy so that it gives some guidance as to how they then select learners from the large number of applicants. Now, we have an insight into that admissions policy. We have reviewed over a number of years, for example, in the context of embracing diversity. We've had the admissions policies and codes of conduct reviewed. And we monitor that very carefully in that space. We also indicated, I think Melissa indicated, that if I ask a school to take learners and they don't do so and the evidence is not great, there's an appeal process that the Melissa can do. Melissa referred to Rubel. Sorry, I can just comment on Rubel. The land has now, after a long time, been identified, and the process of that transfer is in place. It's therefore intended that late in 2021 the planning will start, and that is another 3-year process before the school is finally in place. Also explained to the school community why that delay was there. So the original intent was an intent which was based on the fact that we could get that, and that there's been no issue related to that. Then, Mr. referred, I think, to the prioritization demands, for example, in the Brooklyn Wash area. The challenge is that if you take a look at Brooklyn Wash, you take a look at Marmersbury, you take a look at the West Coast, you take a look at Fentanyl, you take a look at Barney, you take a look at Wassel Bay, a good example. There are so many areas where there's a demand because of growth for learner, for informal settlements, or planned human settlements. Now, the question was, are we stupid and are we engaged in that? We didn't put it like that, but the point is, it's a very important question. We are involved to a degree with, for example, human settlements. But human settlements demands and money does not go hand in hand with the priorities of education. If a human settlement is there, we've got backlogs in schools, So you can't jump the queue and create that demand. It is a very, very difficult. We've had conversations also with municipalities, what's the place of honesty with municipalities, with integrated planning, development planning. If you take a look at the Google example, and Masih Kambani, for example, money needs to go elsewhere to priorities, so it's a question of priorities. I just want to add in collaboration schools. Remember that collaboration schools is a pilot. It's relatively early days. And certainly we will have to indicate the progress in that regard. But there are many things that have been, I was going to say, spin-offs of the collaboration school. The initial design intent of the pilot for collaboration schools has been surpassed dramatically with communities that are starting to want to partner in collaboration with the department, including bringing funding for schools. Our challenge now is just to ensure that if we direct it to the needs, for example, technical skills, education, agriculture, we try to direct it there. There's very good response from communities when we put our priorities on the table. But more importantly, also very often the desire to partner is not where our priorities are. And we have to find that balance very carefully. So there are interesting spin-offs from that. As far as the school management authority is concerned, the minister will speak more about that later, she indicated. Just to say, first of all, that the funding for the school evaluation authority comes from within budget. There's no additional funding to it. The cost for the 7 staff members is approximately 11. The total cost for this year is 12.8 million. And the minister's jump in the budget is because he erroneously that amount was placed in program one. So sorry, Minister, you don't have it in the appropriation budget. We'll take it back again to where it should be. In the budget, it was just placed because of official sports, because it's independent that might be replaced. The Minister's referred to that. I've dealt with the Minister's budget. Minister spoke about the children's commission. Just to say that in the school nutrition, again in the budget debate, there's been a challenge there because the MOD centres, we indicated that the MOD centres was additional. So we said if we're going to have to cut, we've got to cut MOD centres. Everyone was very upset about it, but we did say that that's in fact a third meal that the kids in MOD centres get lost. Treasury listened to that and has now earmarked funds for what sent to feeding, so it's entrenched in that space, takes away our management control over it. I'm not happy with it, but I don't mind money being made available for it. And then the question on how we dealt with that aspect, the question about quality and food, you two further things also about the school nutrition program. One is that the National Department has put forward a proposal of council registration since last week, and that through the heads of registration department meeting that there should be a reduction in the NSCP funding in the fourth term, because there's a bit of wastage because of tricks don't get school in the fourth term. And so that savings can then go to either expand the MOD scheme a bit or to improve the quality of feeding. There's ongoing engagement around the quality of feeding. There's, for example, now remember, the National School Institution Program is a conditional grant. So there's a grant framework and we have to operate in that space. But there is also some experimentation, for example, at the moment with cultures, if I remember correctly, cultures. The chicken nuggets, with chicken nuggets, high protein content, for example, and on medical grounds, that is the advice for good protein content. We'll see how that does with the possible issues. So I think that's covered.
We actually were actually stated that the only place where we could find
can't hold you to no motivation to
submission. This is a question that was not responded to.
Okay.
The ABC indicated that she will ask the NSG to respond to the manager at primary school, just the level of engagement, who's involved, who are the stakeholders in the community, and what are the guarantees for the safety of our officials.
And that's often fashion the question. Archie Lewis might wish to comment. Just to say that the old Mannenberg development has come for about 3 years or maybe longer now, with lots of consultation and different layers of consultation. The department was one of the role plays, also the city of Cape Town is part of that, because of the intention to develop a green belt through Mannenberg. We have a constant start to upgrade schools already. I think Red River has been rebuilt some years ago, so in that green belt has been investment into Mannenberg. Mannenberg Primary School is now one of those. Also, the school Silver Sands, Archie, that is to be moved across the road. Silver Screen, and but part of the consultation in that space had always been about if learners have to move across a short space, there's gang turf in between, and the concern about learners moving to that school with a gang turf. So that has kept the consultations going for a while. And also we want to put the school to skills in the community. That is communication over time, both with SGB Forum, there's also a Mannenberg Development Forum that's been part of the consultation on the north. People change, the people involved. And the principals have also been separately engaged over time at different steps of the process. I'm not sure if there's anything more that you would want or anything else you want to add to that.
Project started about 4 years ago, and it was driven by the two spheres of government, local government and the city of Cape Town, and the province, mainly out of the office of the premier. We were involved, of course, as education department. We had an interest in it, and that our schools and our learners located there. In fact, the Mannenberg plan has been accepted by the Mannenberg Steering Committee, and there was a steering committee consisting of various outgoers in Mannenberg. And with the acceptance of that plan, unfortunately, many of the outgoers, persons who were involved, decided one other reason to withdraw and seeing that the plan is there, but has now just been implemented. Unfortunately, then there was the need to revisit the old CFO and the plan, and that is currently that process that's in place.
Thank you very much. We shall now break for tea. After 7 minutes, we will come back at 10:02. We are quite a large group.